the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The whole field of biomedical ethics is becoming more complex, it seems, not only by the day, but sometimes by the hour. And there is a question coming from Great Britain that is not exactly unique. That is, it's not that it's never been heard from before, but it's an issue that's coming with a particular angle that certainly ought to have our attention. A couple who already have one deaf daughter, and the couple is deaf. Both the mother and the father, the husband and the wife, are deaf. They have one deaf daughter, conceived naturally. Now they're going through, or anticipating going through, IVF, and they want to be able to choose a deaf embryo for implantation. In other words, they are demanding that they be able to have a deaf child through one of the advanced reproductive technologies. This has created a great deal of controversy in Great Britain. I'm also hearing about it over here on this side of the Atlantic. It has all of a sudden begun to light up the biomedical websites and other things, because we're now down to some fascinating material here. Let me just tell you a couple of the interesting angles on this story. First of all, you have the parents arguing that preferring a hearing embryo over a deaf embryo is tantamount to discrimination. They are also claiming that being deaf is not a disability at all, but is simply to make one a part of a, quote, linguistic minority. Now, this should cause Christians to think deeply about what it means to be human, about the morality of the entire field of biomedical ethics and these reproductive technologies, and about how we would answer this particular challenge. It's going to be a great discussion today on the Albert Mohler Program. To join that discussion, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. As always, you can write us right during the program or at any time thereafter at albertmohler.com. Just go to the website, hit the mail button, and you can write us, or just write us from your own email program to mail@albertmohler.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R. We'll get to that discussion in just a few moments, because it's going to touch all of the major issues of our concern related to the reproductive technologies, what it means to be human, whether there is any understanding of normal, what it means to have a disability, and what it would mean to choose embryos, some for implantation and others for destruction. This issue just about hits it all. First, to review some issues at the news on my website at albertmohler.com overnight, I published an article on overt hostility toward homeschoolers. This has been something of a roller coaster, few days, for those who are involved in homeschooling, those who care about homeschooling, and beyond that, anyone who really cares about parental rights. Back on February the 28th, an appeals court in California ruled that parents have no constitutional right to homeschool their children. As the report was published, as the decision was made known, there was an immediate reaction, a tremendous wave of concern. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger came out saying that if indeed this court decision stands upon appeal, and it is going to be appealed, that he would push for legislation in the California General Assembly to allow for homeschooling. Just yesterday, California Superintendent of Public Instruction Jack O'Connell affirmed that families do have a right to homeschool their children. As the Los Angeles Times reported, the superintendent told parents, quote, "There's no cause for alarm. I want to assure parents that choose to homeschool that California Department of Education policy will not change in any way as a result of this ruling. Parents still have the right to homeschool in our state," end quote. So you would think that that's good news, and certainly it is an important clarification, at least on the part of the administration of Governor Schwarzenegger and of the Department of Public Instruction there in the state. But there are other signs as well that ought to be catching our attention, and some of them are rather ominous. For one thing, there is overt hostility toward homeschooling that is certainly coming to the surface, much of it because of this decision and the controversy. In an article published in the Los Angeles Times, an op-ed piece entitled "Regulating Homeschoolers," Walter P. Combs and Ralph E. Shaver, who are both emeritus professors at California Polytechnic University in Pomona, known as Cal Poly Pomona, they respond to the Los Angeles Times editorial calling for the protection of homeschool rights, and they unleashed venom and vitriol at homeschoolers, calling homeschooling elitist and illiberal. Now, just so we know what we're up against, remember, this is an op-ed piece published in the Los Angeles Times. one of the nation's largest and most influential newspapers. And just listen to this language by these two retired professors about homeschooling. They write, "There has always been something decidedly elitist and anti-democratic in homeschooling. It smacks of a belief that privileged children should not have to associate with the other kids in the neighborhood, and that by staying home, they would not be subjected to the leavening effect of a democracy. Moreover, it is apparent from the cries of the far right that there has been a specific policy in homeschooling to teach only the ideas acceptable to ideologues who fear the contaminating influence of what is commonly known as a liberal education." End quote. Now, it's very interesting they throw out the word elitist, because if homeschooling is anything, it's not elitist. Homeschooling is including a vast demographic sector of the society. You have wealthy homeschoolers. You have rather low-income homeschoolers. You have an entire array of more middle-income homeschoolers. To call it elitist is simply to say that the child is in an elite and privileged position because of the direct influence of a parent. That's a very strange definition of elitist. You want to know who the elitists are? It's these two professors retired from Cal Poly Pomona who think that they're absolutely certain that they and other professional educators know what's right for every child, and they want your children and they want your child's mind. Just in case you have any doubt about that, you just have to look at this op-ed piece. They go on and argue that they know better than parents. Their hostility toward parents is evident. They argue, for instance, dismissively about homeschool by saying that homeschooled parents teach social studies by putting their kids in front of the television screen. Listen to their language. Quote, "watching Fox with its strange assortment of oddballs pontificating on current events." End quote. Now, they also display an open animus against evangelical Christians. Listen to this statement. Quote, "It is evident that the vast majority who teach their offspring in front of the television do so because they don't want their children to be subjected to such dangerous doctrines as evolution, abortion, global warming, equal rights, and other ideas abhorrent to the evangelical mantra." Now, you would think that there might be at least the decency, the intellectual honesty for two people that supposedly gave their lives to teaching and retired from a university, to have the intellectual credibility and honesty, even just an ounce, to admit that they have an agenda. And they are so bold and undisguised in their agenda, but they just consider that's normal. In other words, the normal default position should be that children should be taught to believe in evolution, to support evolution, and abortion, and other ideas, they say, abhorrent to the evangelical mantra. Well, what about the liberal mantra? I mean, at least these professors confirm, in a very strange way, what we're really up against. The cultural divide could not be any more clear than in considering what these professors are writing. Now, there is other hostility, overt hostility toward homeschooling that's also instructive to us, some of it coming unsurprisingly from the National Education Association, the NEA. And someone forwarded me this article, and I was fascinated to see it. It's an article that is published on the NEA's website, and the NEA's hostility to homeschooling is longstanding and actually quite understandable. But the NEA comes back and writes, it publishes this article that calls the homeschoolers, homeschooling parents, gullible and identifies them as well-meaning amateurs. In other words, hands off the kids, leave it to the professionals. Let me just read to you directly from the article. It is by a man by the name of Dave Arnold. Here's what he wrote. He wrote, "So why would some parents assume they know enough about every academic subject to homeschool their children? You would think that they might leave this, the shaping of their children's minds, careers, and futures, to trained professionals. That is, to those who have worked steadily at their profession for 10, 20, 30 years. Teachers!" Exclamation point. Just listen to this sentence. Again, you would think it was a joke if it wasn't published on the NEA's website. You'd almost want to believe that some saboteur got on their website and published something this ludicrous. This is what they said. "You would think that parents would leave the shaping of their children's minds, careers, and futures to trained professionals." Well, there you go. Now, you want the kicker in this? That article is written by a school janitor, evidently a member of the NEA. That's how he's identified on their website, but the NEA published the article. So, take it or leave it, there you see the cultural conflict before us. It comes down to this kind of overt hostility, and it also comes down to the argument you see here. An argument over worldview and what education should be expected to provide children and to inculcate in children, and it comes down to who really knows what's best for children, parents or professionals. You really can't get the juxtaposition or the contrast any more clear than that. I think even parents who would make the decision other than homeschooling would believe, certainly Christian parents, that they should not be leaving the educating of their children and the shaping of their minds and hearts in particular to credentialed professionals. The credentialed professionals in the Bible, by the way, are the parents. Back to talk about parenthood in a new biomedical age. Would it be moral for a deaf couple to demand a deaf child? We'll be right back on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. One of the realities of our present day is that we are conceiving questions that have never been considered before. If even they were dreamt before, it was a matter of some kind of a fantasy, science fiction, not reality. But now we're dealing with reality. And every day seems to bring some new, excruciating question from the field of reproductive technologies and the larger field of biomedical ethics. But Great Britain is really abuzz with a controversy right now over the fact that a deaf couple, a deaf married couple that has one child already that is deaf, a little girl, wants to have another child through IVF and wants to be able to select deaf embryos for implantation and not hearing embryos. In other words, they demand the right to have only deaf children. Now, let me read to you from the article. This is from BBC News, the article by Claire Murphy, health reporter for the BBC. It says, for a long time, the debate about the genetic testing of embryos is focused on whether we should stop people from creating the perfect person, blonde, blue-eyed, with athletic prowess and a high IQ. Now a deaf couple have turned this on its head. Far from wanting a flawless child, they actively want a baby which suffers the same hearing difficulty as they themselves. The couple have become icons in a deaf movement which sees this impairment not as a disability, but as the key to a rich culture which has its own language, history, and traditions, a world deaf parents would naturally want to share with any offspring. Moreover, they argue that to prefer a hearing embryo over a deaf one is tantamount to discrimination. But to others, both those who can hear and those who cannot, deliberately bringing a child with a disability into the world when one without one born verges on the morally repugnant. Now, right now in Great Britain, it appears that the Human Embryology and Fertilization Bill would not allow this in Great Britain. But it looks like it could be allowable, of course, elsewhere. And there are many people who are pointing to the fact that in the United States, known around the world as the wild, wild west of reproductive technology, with virtually anything now allowed, it could be possible here. Now, there are some fascinating things in this article. This is from The Guardian. The Guardian, by the way, is the most left wing of the large dailies there in Great Britain, historically identified with the Labour Party. And a socialist position, it's also one of the most interesting newspapers in the world, if you have the chance to look at it on a daily basis. Article by Gabby Hinsliff is asking the question, this couple wants a deaf child, should we try to stop them? It gives a great deal more about the couple. Paula Garfield, a theater director, and her partner, by the way, it looks like they're not married, who is an artist and designer, also deaf. They'd hoped to have a child who could not hear. They had one daughter who's now 3 years old, Molly. They said, we celebrated when we found out about Molly's deafness. Being deaf is not about being disabled or medically incomplete. It's about being part of a linguistic minority. We're proud not of the medical aspect of deafness, but of the language we use and the community we live in. Now the couple are hoping to have a second child, one they also wish to be deaf, and that desire has brought them into a sharp confrontation with the British Parliament. The male partner said, Paula, that is the female partner, is now in her early 40s. Our first daughter was born naturally, but due to Paula's age, we may need IVF for the second. The trouble is that according to the bill, the law there in Great Britain governing these things. The selection of a hearing child through IVF is permitted, but embryos found to have deafness genes be automatically discarded. Quote, this sends out a clear and direct message that the government thinks deaf people are better off not being born, end quote. Now, I can think of about 100 different questions related to this. First of all, you have the whole technology of IVF, which I've written about extensively. I have grave moral concerns about the entire technology, if for no other reason, by the way, that it raises these very questions we're talking about right now. Then you have the whole question of embryo selection. And what's really interesting is that you have now many people who are in favor of embryo selection in certain cases are very troubled by this case or opposed to this proposal. In other words, there are people who say, look, it should be perfectly moral to select from human embryos those that are more likely to be healthy, those that are less likely to be disabled. And eventually, of course, just as that first article I cited from the BBC mentioned, how long will it be before you say, I want the blue-eyed one. I want the one that's good at baseball. I want the one with the high IQ. I don't want the other ones. But that has been an effort largely to come up with the highest quality embryo, to use language that we would have to shudder to use when talking about human beings. It's the commodification of the embryo we're talking about here, after all. But now you have something going the other way, saying, no, we are demanding the right to select a deaf embryo, only deaf embryos for implantation, because we only want a deaf child. Now, a related question here is the whole question of deafness. Should we consider deafness a disability or not? This couple says it's not a disability. It is membership in a linguistic minority. But I just have to say, as a hearing person, very thankful for hearing, and I grew up with knowing deaf people, deaf persons, and I knew something of their struggle, and even back then knew something of the debate over sign language, lip reading, and what it meant to be a linguistic minority. But I would simply argue that hearing is also about more than language. It's about more than just being a part of a linguistic majority or a linguistic minority. It's about a lot more than that. This particular proposal, this controversy in Great Britain, raises all the questions. And I want to remind you that this is a controversy in Great Britain precisely because at the current law as it stands, this would not be allowed. But there is no law in the United States that would prevent this from happening here. And so this couple could conceivably just buy cross-Atlantic tickets, come over here, have it done, and go back to Great Britain and circumvent the law there in Great Britain. And people are doing that all over the place. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255. What would you say to this couple? Let's impanel you, as the listeners to this program, as a biomedical ethical review panel. You're being asked to decide on this. You're not just listening to this with the curiosity of a person who's listening to an issue of controversy in the news. You are a Christian listening to this, wondering how we would frame a Christian response to this question. The phone number to join this discussion and let me know how you would decide this case is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You can also just write us at email. Always reaching us, just go to the website at albertmiller.com, hit the mail button, and it will get to us. Or just write us from your own email program at mail@albertmiller.com. We are always glad to get your messages, and as many as possible, we will get on the air in the course of the program today. Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What would you say to a couple who say, we demand a right to in vitro fertilization technology, and we demand the right to select only those embryos that are deaf? Now, there are so many different angles to the story. An unmarried couple, there's so many angles to the whole question of ability and disability. There's so many questions related to the larger picture of IVF. We're going to try to zero in on the precise issue that we are confronted with in this case. Would it be ethical to select only deaf embryos for implantation? The phone number again, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, every day, at some point in the day, it seems, I am drawn to the reflection that we are the first generation in human history to be confronted by some questions that simply must be answered. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. That's why we discuss issues such as this. And this is your invitation to join that intelligent Christian conversation. by calling us at 877-893-8255. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The question has to do with the controversy in Great Britain where a deaf couple is demanding the right to implant only deaf embryos in terms of IVF technology. How would you respond to that demand? The phone number is 877-893-8255. In Suffolk, Virginia, Mike's on the line listening on XM170. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I believe the couple does have the right to make the election that they want. How the child turns out, of course, is going to be up to God and how they raise him.
Okay, Mike, we're talking about genetic testing here in terms of the fact that they're going to select embryos that are deaf by genetic testing rather than those that are not. It's not like there's a mystery. And you are suggesting that, I just want to make sure I get your point here, that the parents should have the right to select whatever genetic traits they want?
In the situation of we're into genetics, yes.
Okay, would you, just out of curiosity, so that means that you're good, that you think parents should have the right to decide, this is the child, kind of child I want. Would you put any limitations on that?
Well, I'm feeling bad about the whole situation because I don't believe in that concept, especially being a Christian. But based on the theoretical question that we have, you know, should they be allowed? Yes, they should be allowed. And no, I wouldn't put any. Because then when you put as constraint, you're saying one is worse or better than the other, and that's not fair.
Okay, well, just out of curiosity here, just because this is a part of the question, Mike, are you saying that that society should be neutral about deafness and non-deafness?
Yes, because there, as you, having known and working with people who are deaf as opposed to those who are non-deaf, as far as what they do and how they react, they're no better or worse than we are.
Okay, thanks for your call, Mike. And, boy, there's so much there to take on. But I want to take on that last statement and come back to the fact that deaf people and hearing people are both made in the image of God. Blind people and sighted people are both made in the image of God. But we do have an understanding, even from the Scripture, that God has given us these gifts of sight and of hearing that are reflections of what it means to be human, and indeed what it even means to be made in the image of God. Lacking these things is a disability. And so I'm just going to declare, as clearly as I know how, that I think it is completely irrational and biblically wrong to suggest that we are neutral on whether a person should or should not be given sight or hearing. And let me throw this into another arena. Let's say, because this is a live controversy in some deaf communities, let's say that it is possible to heal, that's kind of a prejudicial word, deaf people would say, a deaf child and give that child hearing. There are some people who say that would be wrong. And as a matter of fact, at Gallaudet University, which is the nation's largest university of the deaf community, they recently, by student and other protest, deposed a president, believing that she was insufficiently deaf. I think from a Christian, biblical perspective, that's a fundamental misunderstanding. We need to honor deaf people and blind people and people with other disabilities, but we can't blind ourselves, no pun intended, to the fact that it is a disability. And, why are we working on cures for things if there's no problem? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The larger issue I have, though, with the last call has to do with a parent's right to genetically engineer a child. I just don't buy into that at all. But the moment you buy into IVF technology, you're pretty much there. by implication at least. Let's go to Paula calling from Aztec, New Mexico. Go ahead, Paula.
Hi.
What do you think? Yes, go ahead, Paula. What do you think?
Well, you know, we have to get back to the core of the matter here, and the core of the matter as Christians, that IVF is not okay. It's not moral.
Well, I actually agree with you. I've written and published to that effect in books and in articles. I will tell you, there are Christians who would disagree, and there are Christians who have used IVF. I think there are ways to limit the moral complications of IVF by implanting all the embryos, by selecting none of them, and by allowing none of them to be in a continuous frozen state. But, Paul, I will tell you that my argument comes down to the fact that the moment you get into some of these reproductive technologies, you are getting into a human engineering program, whether you want to admit it or not. And one of the most devastating realities of IVF is the fact that we have over 1 million frozen human embryos. Every one of those embryos made in the image of God, in cold storage, awaiting destruction in this country. Not to mention how many more millions around the world. To join the conversation, give us a call at 877-893-8255. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, and we'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Back when Abraham Lincoln was a lawyer, he gave an advice piece to a client that basically came down to this. Paraphrasing it, he said, if on the stand the prosecutor asks you the question, were you still beating your mother-in-law when you shot your wife, don't answer the question. And what Abraham Lincoln, as the lawyer, was saying, you got to separate these questions. Those are two different issues. You can't answer that question. And that's really what we're facing here, isn't it? I mean, you're talking about a couple claiming that deafness is merely membership in a linguistic minority, claiming that there is a moral right to have a deaf child. Then you have the question of IVF. Then you have the issue of embryo selection. You start putting it all together, and it is one moral challenge after the other. None of this would be possible. None of this discussion would be taking place if we weren't talking about in vitro fertilization and the embryo research with advanced reproductive technologies we have now. But let me tell you, it's related to the same question as the kind of genetic testing that can be done in the womb. I mean, that's where we're losing most of the fetuses that are found to be likely carriers of the Down syndrome gene. It's by abortion. And that's just one moral step away from the destruction of the embryo. And that's taking place all over the world. Let's go to Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, where Joe's on the line. Listen to XM170. Go ahead, Joe.
Dr. Mohler, thank you for taking my call. I thought about it, and I think everyone's sort of looking at it, or at least the media maybe looking at it from the wrong view, that they're thinking the parent's point of view, but I don't think it's really in the best interest of the child. I mean, it's not really the child has no say in whether they come into life with this disability or not, and by definition, it is a disability, and these parents are basically intentionally wounding them with this disability.
Okay, Joe, I appreciate that point. Let me come back and ask the question another way, because I just want to test something with you here. Are you opposed to the choice these parents would make of deafness, or are you really morally concerned about the fact that they're even thinking about a choice, in other words, of selecting one embryo rather than another?
I think, well, both, but mostly about one embryo over the other. I mean, you're having a child, but really I think it's the child's choice that should be, and that's essentially in God's hands, but really I think you're ignoring that then.
Yeah, you mean the parents. Yeah, I think the bigger issue here is the fact that when you start deciding, I can decide who will be born and who will not be born by embryo testing, when you begin to do that, and you begin to say, I can elect this embryo rather than that embryo, you're in a quality control question, and it's just a matter of which quality you want to control. I think the whole question is immoral, and I think this issue might help us to see that. Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee, where Paul's listening on XM170. Go ahead, Paul. Okay, Paul, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what do you think?
I think that you should pretty much let the deaf person wants to choose the deaf embryo, then let them choose it. I don't think we can manipulate the genetics of the child to determine you know, what we want in hair color, deafness, whatever. But, I mean, I think a deaf child would probably do better in a deaf home than, let's say, a hearing home, let's say.
Okay, just to be clear, they are able to choose a deaf embryo rather than a non-deaf embryo.
Right, okay, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just don't think that we have the ability to choose or, you know, manipulate the genetics to make them, make us God, in a sense, to determine what we want.
You don't think it's playing God to say I want that embryo and not this embryo?
Well, I mean, we have the ability to choose our wife or our spouse or other aspects of our lives, what not a child in that aspect of the world.
Well, I guess because the women that you don't choose don't get killed, which is what happens in this embryo selection. The embryos you don't want are destroyed. They're killed. I think, if nothing else, that is a huge distinction there.
Well,
Paul, I appreciate your call. Go ahead. If you want to come back, go ahead.
Well, if the deaf embryo was going to be killed because it's deaf, you know, then they're going to choose the more healthy embryos over the deaf embryos, then let the deaf person choose the deaf embryo.
Okay. Well, I think that just makes my point that you shouldn't have the choice. I think the whole question of choosing the embryo, any embryo, over any other embryo, choosing this one to be implanted and that one to be destroyed, is the inherently immoral act. And I think, if nothing else, the discussion today has indicated how deeply this whole question of choice and a consumerist mentality, the commodification of everything now down to the human embryo, has affected the way many, many people think. And let me tell you, one of my concerns is, and in fact a chief concern here, is I think a lot of evangelical Christians simply think that medical technology is moral because it's there. In other words, if medical technology has produced this option or this choice, it must be moral to make this choice. And I'm going to suggest to you that going well back into the 20th century, we've already been on ground in which we should know that's simply not right. We look back to the Third Reich and certainly to Nazi Germany and their goal to create a master race. They thought they could determine what quality control would look like. You know, the stereotypical blonde-haired, blue-eyed, athletic male, reproductively fertile female to create the master race. As a matter of fact, something going on right now in France is an interesting controversy about children that were taken from France during World War II when France was occupied. They were chosen on their genetic traits, not ones that were identifiable by the kind of genetic testing we have now, the kind that are identifiable by looking at the child. And remember that the Nazis came up with medical instruments to test everything from the distance of the eyes between each other, the fatness of the nose, and all kinds of things. They came up with a gradation of exactly how to identify to the genetically superior over the genetically inferior. We look back at that and we say that was just wrong. And certainly we look at the Holocaust and we see that persons were selected out as being, this was the phrase they used, Lebens und Wertens, Lebens, life unworthy of life. And we say, rightly, that is abhorrent and that is wrong. But some of the same people who would come to that right and necessary moral judgment would look at thousands, indeed millions, of human embryos being flushed and destroyed and say that that's somehow less problematic. And the reality is, whether you're Joseph Mengele in a clinic in Nazi Germany, or if you are a couple in a fertility clinic in the United States right now and you begin saying, this is the kind of child I want, this is the only kind of child I'll accept, I'm going to do quality control on my embryos, you're buying into the same logic, whether you want to admit that or not. You can always continue this discussion by writing us at albertmoeller.com. Go and hit the mail button at the website or write us at mail@albertmoeller.com. It'll be fascinating to see where this discussion goes. In Great Britain, it appears that Parliament is going to block this from taking place. But it'll be fascinating to know what argument they come up with, seeing as how they've already embraced IVF technology. We'll be right back on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I rarely would say this on the air, but I'm going to tell you, I'm concerned about the conversation we had today. Because I think it reflects the degree to which a consumerist mentality and pragmatism have infected even the evangelical community. Without thinking about the first principle that every single human being, and that means every single human embryo, is made in the image of God and deserving of all protection. To decide that you can select any embryo over any other is one of the greatest acts of human hubris and arrogance I could even imagine. But we live in a society in which we can order our car, we can order our apartment, we can order our laptop computer with whatever we want on it. And that's the way we want our children too. Very interesting points made today, some frankly that deeply trouble me, but this is a conversation that will continue. As I've said, in Great Britain, it looks like Parliament's going to block this option through the agency there that handles matters of embryology and fertilization. But I can't imagine what argument they're going to come up with, seeing as how they already allow the selection of hearing embryos. In other words, who's going to argue over what quality is to be received and what quality is to be denied? The moment you get into that, it's just a matter of negotiating. It's just a matter of deciding how we can negotiate human dignity down. And pretty soon we'll be arguing that, we have a right to have a child that can run fast. We have a right to have a child that has blue eyes. We have a right to have a child that's a boy rather than a girl. And don't kid yourself. Sex selection abortions are going on not only in India and in China, but here in the United States as well. And certainly you have an awful lot of people right now who are saying both of embryos and more importantly of fetuses and of babies in the womb, I don't want a Down syndrome child, I'm going to abort. And there are an awful lot of people who say, they ought to have the right to do that. No, they ought not to have the right to do that. But that raises the prior question of abortion, even as this current issue raises the prior question of IVF. And there are an awful lot of people out there who say, I believe in IVF because I know someone that got a baby that way. Well, thank God for that baby. But we can't be thankful for every technology when you consider what this technology inherently brings to the equation. And I've written about that. You'll find, if you go to my website, several articles on IVF, test tube babies, as they were known when we first started writing about this. But this is an issue that is not going to go away. It'll be back next week or next month with a new question. Deafness this time. Down syndrome, when we discussed it just a matter of a few months ago. It'll be something else, and something else fast. And perhaps the most likely thing to come along right now is genetic testing for proclivities towards certain diseases. It's going to be fascinating to watch as this debate unfolds. Just remember, nothing less than human dignity is at stake. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.